Bobby here. Thanks for coming, brother.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I keep seeing the clips. You keep tagging me in them, and I'm like, I'm taking notice. They're really well done.
Thank you.
And because you've had all of my friends on, I'm like, I got to get on this quick before my baby comes. So.
Is there a sixth one coming? Was it?
Sixth baby coming in about 2 weeks. So I'm excited. I'm overwhelmed with a lot of stuff I'm trying to handle and take care of before I take off. But it's a blessing for sure.
It really is. My third one's coming.
Yeah, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Three girls.
Third one is a girl, and it's actually official right here.
Yeah.
A lot of people are asking me.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. We'll make it official right here. So by the time it goes out of the pod, it's probably goes live. It's probably about the time anyway. So
when is she due?
End of April, around that time.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, sorry if I gave it away.
No, it's okay.
We don't know what mine's going to be. It's a surprise.
So far you have five boys. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're hoping it's a girl, but I can take another boy. It's fine.
Soccer
There's
team.
Always the next one, right?
So. Yeah. A soccer team of kids, of boys.
Right now we have a basketball team.
Yes.
With a sub on the bench. And then we're going to go for soccer because my kids obviously are not that tall.
Yeah.
So maybe basketball is not our sport, but if we get to 11, we could do a soccer team.
That's amazing, man. That's
or maybe
amazing.
A hockey team, but my kids are not like that Canadian. We got Persian and Spanish background. They're not ice guys.
So your wife is Spanish?
She's from Nicaragua. Cool. She's a Latina.
So cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And your Iranian background?
Persian, Iranian.
Obviously, you're known for the Iranian... skits, like to make fun of your own culture. That's amazing.
I get a pass on that. Yeah. We were just talking about it off camera that I can also do a few other accents, but I always feel a little bit weird doing them now because I'm not, I can do the Persian stuff because I'm Persian. I can make fun of my own culture, but it's difficult when you overstep. And I know a lot of comedians do it, but they're comedians. I'm still not there yet. I mean, some people see me as a comedian, but.
So let me ask you, Cash, where did you get this idea of, doing skits, making fun, having fun, and like why? Like when did you get this idea?
So we came from humble beginnings. My family never really had much, but my dad always invested in stuff that would, bring up our skill sets.
Right.
And a lot of the things he was really into was electronics. So like computer, cameras, and he always had a camera, like even back in the day in Iran, before I was born, he had like the Super 8 cameras and, he would film with them and explore and stuff. So he was into that stuff. When we were young, he would invest in digital cameras or even the old cameras, with the VHS tapes, the big ones you put on your shoulder. And I would get the chance to play around with it. Mm-hmm. He was always very comfortable with, go learn, go play. So... By playing around with it, I would make videos and I would make stop motion videos with Legos. I started making music videos. I would make fun of my dad, most of it. I would dress like him because he would give me shit about don't eat this. This is bad for you. Do this, do that. So I would take all of that and turn it into music video, making fun of him. And then I'd play it back for my sisters and my friends to watch. And it was funny. Yeah. But the problem was we couldn't afford too many tapes, so we had to re-record over that. So I don't have any of the old footage, or else it would have been hilarious to have it out. And that's really the beginning of it. And then throughout high school, we would do different projects together with my friends. We'd do it on video, and then also we'd do pranks. And I used to breakdance too, so we'd film our breakdancing sessions and to learn from our moves. But the pranks were the best. We would do things like throw water balloons off of the balcony on like families and videotape them from the corner.
You're a prankster then. Yeah.
I love doing pranks. I still love doing pranks. And if I wasn't in real estate, I would probably just let go and do a lot more.
Right.
I'd probably be doing pranks. I'd be doing more skits, comedy stuff. You know what? I'd probably even be more successful than I am today. I don't know.
Who knows?
Like YouTube sometimes with this stuff. If people like your humor, they like your jokes, they like your pranks, you take off like crazy. But I feel like a little bit of seriousness is important too. You have to set an example for these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want them to know dad as like this jokester, prankster, YouTuber who's like just doing whatever the hell he wants. Being a little professional, dressing, I love dressing nice in front of them. They always look at me in the mornings like, oh, dad, you're going to work. You look good. Sets an example, right?
That's why I noticed with your content is that you have the skits that essentially pulls new people that not in your sphere already, mm-hmm. right? Because your skits tend to get more views. I noticed that.
Yeah, they do a lot better.
Right? So you have different purposes of different mm-hmm. content. Mm-hmm. And the skits, the ones that you collab with as well, with different real estate influencers, mm-hmm. is what I like to call it, drives a lot of views. So you're essentially pulling a lot of new audience mm-hmm. leads.
Yes,
the other day, real estate
That's
leads.
Right.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, mostly like your stories and sometimes you post reels and pictures of like family.
Mm-hmm.
You working out. You doing the deals. Mm-hmm. The real estate behind the scenes. So can you share more of the audience like why you do that?
Yeah. So when I first started making content is I was just like bored and it had nothing to do with real estate.
Mm.
Most people come to the content with the mind of like, I want to make business out of it.
Yeah.
For me, it was completely different. It was, I want to put my hobby out there.
Mm.
And in fact, I was very reluctant because I thought it was going to hurt my business. I'm like, if I start doing these comedy skits, how are my current clients are gonna feel about that? How are they going to look at me? And I'm like, you know what? I don't care because the ones who truly know me, they've worked with me. They know who I am. They know I have a sense of humor, but also I'm very professional. I started making the skits, but I put guidelines on it where I would make the skits about me as a realtor. So they were somewhat related to real estate, but also the underlying message was good, is a good message. So like
yeah.
I'm a professional realtor. I would never swear. I would never make myself look bad. And lo and behold, I started getting a lot more views, interactions, engagements. People really loved the fact that I was putting my vulnerability out there. I was just being authentic.
You're being real.
Being real, being myself. And then it made me realize that like just because you're a realtor doesn't take away all the other personality traits you have. You could be into music, you could be into making people laugh, you could have different hobbies and traits that you should still show. The only issue with social media is that whatever you put out there amplifies.
Right.
So for example, if you're putting house tours that are maybe took an hour of your week, people are going to know you as just a guy who does house tours. You're out there touring houses all day and every day.
Right.
Right. So I know that I could make a lot more money by doing more real estate content, but I think there's multiple aspects to content making. One is you need to show your personality and who you are and what you have to offer for them to follow you, because not everyone is buying and selling houses on a daily basis. Right. So then they follow you because you're great, you're educational or you're funny. And then in between you sprinkle some real estate to say, hey, this is what I do as a profession as well. And it brings business that way. But it's not necessarily the best way to do it. Everyone has a different strategy. I see your house tours are actually very well done.
Thank you.
You do more of a YouTube stuff and your views are like averaging 10,000 views per video. That stuff probably converts more. Because people see you as the authority in real estate and you're showing houses and you're bringing them direct real estate content. But I also think people crave to connect with others and they want to see someone who's authentic, and you're actually very, very comfortable in your content, which is great.
Thank you.
But the funny aspect is a very big tool. It's a big hook.
Well, your videos are hilarious.
Thank you.
The ones that you dress up as the stereotypical Iranian agent and then you have the Iranian accent and then you always say that, oh, I'm the best. I'm the best in Willowdale and best in Forest Hill. I'm the best agent. You want the best, right? It's hilarious.
So that's really sure you know too, because you've dealt with a lot of Persians.
Typical, yeah.
Yeah.
Even all culture too, like Chinese,
true,
right? Everyone has their stereotypes. So it's hilarious. Like you.
Yeah. There's something about Iranians that, we're so proud of who we are and we want to just show it so much. And that's what makes us like the material things as well. So like you'll notice Persians are always dressed nicely, even if they're going to the grocery store and back, they always have to look their best, have the best things, and they make it known. You know, I'm the best, I have the best things, my house is the best. Every time I go to a listing presentation or we're visiting a house and it's Persians and we're ready for them showing us the best house we've ever seen.
They always say it's the best.
It's always the best house. Like, oh, you see these windows? These are the best windows. You see these floors? These are the best floors. It's like, great, let's get through that and discuss numbers. But I thought it was great because at first I thought maybe the Persian community is not going to like the fact that I'm making fun of that. But it's not a bad thing to poke at, because you know, we're proud people. We're proud of the things we own. We're proud of our culture. We're proud of who we are. And it's the truth. We show it to people. We make it known. And so it's also cool to point it out and poke fun at it.
Yeah, no, the fact that you put it out there, right? And people can, it's relatability at the end of the day. The Iranian buyers or sellers can relate to your content.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is drives a crazy amount of engagement and end up subscribing to your stuff and following because they crave to see more of that.
Exactly,
I think there's not even a trend now. It's been happening since a long time is that in social media, everyone's craving authenticity.
Yeah.
There's so many like posers and fakers and people can just see right through it, especially in social media, right? Mm-hmm. So going back to the question of, you know, when did you start the decided to do the skits? I want to know because you started
for real estate on social media.
Yeah, you started real estate in 2009, right?
Yeah.
When was the moment that, okay, I'm going to put these out. Enough is enough. Mm-hmm. Was it like a natural transition or was it something that you always wanted to do? That
I wanted to do. At the time, I was I had a different partner and we were mostly focused on investment properties. And we're making a killing at it. If you remember 2015, 16, 17,
I remember. That was, the market was I was killing it, the pre-constructions.
You're doing pre-construction.
At that time, I do all sorts of divisions, but pre-construction, I was specifically killing it, the condos, because that was the boom years, the golden years.
Yeah, so you remember that.
I remember that.
And so like it was the heat of the market, so I wasn't focused on making videos, but it was always in the back of my mind. Like it was it's a hobby, it's a passion. When they brought in, and I was waiting to change my strategy, and I had a lot of consumer people from school, from previous jobs. People, luckily, knock on wood, like me as a person. They like my personality, and they like my transparency and my honesty. And I realized all the people I've done business with from day one are repeat clients now. You know, very few clients have left me. I still have my book of business, which is what's been really my main bread and butter and my main supporting factor. So,
right.
So I'm like, this is why I was like, let's just go with the videos because I don't think these people would leave me. They already know who I am. It may be harder to gain new business. I didn't know what to expect. In 2018, when after the market came down,
yep,
and you know all those investment strategies kind of stopped, I was like, this is the perfect time to change strategies because my business is slowing down a little bit anyways. Let's just go all out.
Yeah,
I have nothing to lose. So
exactly.
I started doing that, but it took 2 years to actually gain business out of it.
Yes.
Because at the beginning, people are like, what is he doing? It was polished. I don't know if you've seen any of my original ads. They were polished ads, professionally produced. So it didn't look bad. People didn't talk bad about it, but it still had a chuckle humor to it. But it's like, what is this guy's strategy? What is he doing?
Right.
You know? And then slowly, people were looking forward to seeing the videos. And it created like this whole different dynamic where I wasn't used to or I wasn't expecting. People were just following and reaching out and they wanted to conversate. And obviously they knew I was a realtor, so they would use real estate as a point of conversation. And then slowly they would convert to business.
So would you say you're, because of the content or these newer style content that you're doing, these newer videos, these skits, did it bring in business? Did it bring in?
Yeah,
it did. Right? How much
average,
would you say?
It brings about 20 to 30% of my business now.
That's really good.
Which is really big. Yeah,
that's big.
I measured 2022. It was around 228,000. In last year, it was a little bit less, just under 200,000. But it's still carried through. And this year already, of the listings I have, they're from social media.
Beauty.
And the one, I wouldn't say bad thing. I would say negative thing with social media. Marketing for real estate agents is that it doesn't keep you focused. You get leads, you know, someone in Mississauga wants to work with you because they really love who you are. So they'll call you and say, come to Mississauga, list my house. You go to Mississauga and list your house. Before I used to farm an area like East York and you know, did a lot more business in like Leaside, East York, those areas. And then my investment stuff was like, I would take buyers to like areas like Etobicoke or even Eglinton West and like do a lot of purchases there, Willowdale. So like I was hyper focused in those pockets and I knew everything about those pockets. But now if someone calls you and says, come and list my house in Pickering, you know, you have to make sure that you have all the right data and information and know the neighborhood as well. So that's the only downside to social media. It's not hyper focused as far as location goes. But the great thing about it is that people know who you are.
Yeah.
you don't do a listening.
I see where you're coming from, because you're getting exposure everywhere.
You're getting exposure everywhere.
The videos all out around the world, around the city. Mm-hmm. You're getting different type of buyers, a different type of audience that wants to use you because they saw your content.
Exactly. Yeah.
And going back to with, it took you 2 years to really get to see business from it. Very similar to our signature house tours.
Mm.
I started around COVID that time,
mm-hmm.
and the first year. I was knocking out like 50 videos in 1 year, mm. right? Obviously, the first 10 or once 20 videos. Week. Yeah, about once a week. And very cringy the first few videos, but that's how it is. Yeah. Just do it and you'll figure out along the way and it'll get better.
Mm-hmm.
First year, I didn't see any business coming from it. But what I saw the first year was it established credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when I go to a listing appointment, it was easier to secure the listings.
Exactly.
Because at least we're doing video tours that was different from other agents.
Mm-hmm.
And then when there's more views and more subscribers, I noticed, yeah, we get calls. We get people calling us for listing appointments, or I've seen their video from Hong Kong, China, even different countries.
Oh, yeah.
And then the locals also saw it.
Mm.
Very strange recently, this trend. A lot of people are saying that I saw your videos pop up because we do paid ads too,
mm-hmm.
Sponsored spots
yeah.
on YouTube. While their kid is watching Peppa Pig
yeah,
or
yeah.
Blippi or whatever, and then your house toys always pops up.
Hmm.
And
maybe you have a kid friendly face or approach or something.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
But those are the best ones.
Because the parents are watching with the kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, the parents are watching with the kids.
Or they're not watching, but they hear it all of a sudden change from, "Hi, I'm Peppa Pig," to like, "Welcome to the newest listing house that toy. I have." And then they're like, "What's happening there?" Right?
Right.
Because that's what I do with my kids.
Yes.
So it's great. It's I wouldn't great. Complain about it. I think it's memorable. Right?
But going back, so for our audience that's listening, is that content creation and social media is a long game.
Yeah.
I feel like in this generation, everyone expects on-demand results.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They put out a post, they put out a few videos, and they think they're going to get results right away.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And I don't know about you, but there's different elements to it.
Correct.
When it comes to content creation, you need to have a formula. It's not just make one style of video. I mean, you make one style of video, it's great, but if you want to really convert that to belly-to-belly and
meetings
and actual business, you know, you need to, like for me, if I have the hook, which is a funny content, I also need to pepper in some business content. So that's where you see the stories. I didn't start doing stories until like a year and so after I started posting the skits. When I started doing the stories, that's when I started seeing more conversations about real estate, because people saw my day-to-day that I'm dealing with staging, I'm listing, I'm showing houses, I'm talking about neighborhoods, what we're dealing with on that day. And it brought people to understand what I'm actually capable of and how much knowledge I have when it comes to real estate, because I would share it. I would be in the car waiting for a client.
Yeah.
I would say,
yeah.
By the way, if you're buying a house and it's backing onto a school or power lines, you may be able to get it for a better price, but then when you're selling it, you're going to have you're going to have to sell it for a discount, things like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had purchased a house that was facing power lines. And
so you bought a house, you bought a house at
So I really got into real estate when I was 16. Before that, my parents, divorced, we didn't have much. We were living in an apartment with my sisters and stuff. Space was super tight. I kept harassing my dad, "Let's go buy a house." He's like, "I don't have enough money. You go work and then we'll buy." Long story short, we bought our first place. Our second place, when I started renting the first place, I started making money off the rental. It was carrying itself. Then we went for another place, and that place was facing power lines.
Mm.
And the agent we hired didn't say anything. She just pretty much showed up, did the offer, and made her money. And I learned through the hard, sale afterwards, when I was trying to get rid of that property, that those things affect the value drastically. And, schools and power lines. And I was very young at this age, but through experience, I learned a lot.
Mm.
And then I used that experience to help people when they were purchasing to like stay away from these things, or at least be very well educated and understand the differences, because you could buy in a very nice neighborhood and not be able to afford the regular house in the neighborhood. But within that neighborhood, there's maybe that house that's on a corner facing a school. You can buy in that in the area for much cheaper. And as long as you know that you're buying cheaper and you're going to be selling cheaper, you can't compare or expect that 5 years from now you want to sell and you're going to sell the same price as everyone else. No, because that property has, certain defects or flaws, right? So all of that stuff I learned kind of the hard way. And then I would share that kind of content with my viewers while I was sitting in the car.
Yeah, right? Yeah. No, I love that. It's sharing things that most typical buyers of the public wants to know. Mm-hmm. It's not just the price and the square foot and how many bedrooms. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I created a signature house tour, is to show like almost like a buyer showing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's why it's like a 10-minute long, and I talk everything, not just about the house, but the location.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it backing onto which park? Is there power lines? Mm-hmm. And how far it away is from transit, GO train, mm-hmm. shops and amenities, the school rankings and the score. Mm-hmm. Everything that typical buyer wants to know went before purchasing a property. And we don't, there's nothing that's like unedited in a sense that if it's a bad thing or maybe a good thing, mm-hmm. we don't show it. Just like we just have a new listing in Richmond Hill today, just listed this morning. Mm-hmm. Our team member is doing the open house. The house is facing a T-zone. It's mm. facing a road. And I don't know if you heard this, Cash, that Chinese people, feng shui, don't like facing the T. Mm. In our signature house tour, we don't hide that. Mm. We actually put that in the forefront right away in the intro. We're here, this house, facing a road, boom. Mm-hmm. Right?
Because you don't want to filter. You want to filter out the people that may come and then not want it. You want them to know ahead of time before coming, like, this is what I'm getting.
Exactly. Yeah. And instead of, like, maybe if another agent might recommend, like, oh, we shouldn't show this because it's a, you know, maybe like a taboo or it's not a good thing. It might affect the sale of the property, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I actually highlight it mm-hmm. and put it in the forefront. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing about selling and marketing is that you want to market to the right demographic.
That's right.
I'm not marketing to the people that don't like T-zones. Mm-hmm. I'm marketing to the people that actually like T-zones, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And there are people like that.
Yeah, and our job is to make the viewers understand what are the benefits of this.
Correct.
Right? So for example, like, because I did a lot of business in Willowdale and there's a lot of Chinese and Iranians, so I know very well about the feng shui, the T-zone. And I don't know if you noticed, but the younger generations doesn't seem to care as much.
I noticed that.
Yeah, it's mostly more
of the parents and the parents' parents.
The older mentality.
Correct.
Or you can combat that T-zone with a big tree in front of the door, or like, you know what I mean? So there's ways to get around it. Or I would have clients that would count the number of stairs. You know,
I had a client like that too.
Yeah. Or they didn't want a house ending with four or something like that.
So maybe our generation, because the prices are so high now, they're like, you know what? I don't even have a choice now.
Compromise. Yeah, because compromise. Just buy whatever. It doesn't matter. You're in the middle of a battlefield. You don't care. But you know, the thing is, it's like, it's our job. This is what realtors get paid for.
Exactly.
We communicate the benefits of a house. Some people may see something that they may not like, and it might be superficial. Like, the house is on a corner lot. Oh, I don't like corner lots. Why don't you like corner lots? I don't know. Most people don't even know. They just heard their parents say they don't like corner lots. Corner lots are better in some senses, where you get a better layout. You get lots more windows on both sides.
Premium lot. So much typically
land.
Wider.
Yeah, wide land. You get so much light coming in from every direction. Mm-hmm. There's been so many corner properties I've walked into and I just absolutely fell in love with the amount of bright light, because you get windows on both sides. Where regular houses have two homes on each side, you get windows on the front and the back. So educating people, because they come in with preconceptions and they think, oh, my dad told me don't do this. And it's like, why? Do you even know why? And sometimes they don't even know. They just repeat. So those kind of things is great for content.
Yes.
Right? You sit down and you say, hey, by the way, these are the pros, these are the cons. And there's a lot of things that we notice in a day-to-day when we see homes that like a buyer wouldn't notice by just visiting it for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy when you think about it. Buyers make a decision on the house they want to buy within less than like 30 minutes these days. Walk in, they look 30 minutes, and then they say, let's make an offer.
I would say it's typically in the first 5 seconds
Even shorter, you're right.
They know if this is the one or not.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed, is that right when they walk in the door, based on their reaction and their eyes lit up. Mm-hmm. And that's why I always tell my clients, first impression matters so much when listing a property. Mm-hmm. The right staging, the smell, the marketing. Mm-hmm. The moment they step in, they actually, in their mind, predetermine if this is going to be the one or not.
Yeah.
And then
first impressions are the
best. First impression is very important. Mm-hmm. As long as you finish it off properly, the agent knows how to guide you and everything. Mm-hmm.
That's why prepping. So when I first started in the business, I wasn't a good listing agent. I was a great buying agent. Why? Because before that, I had purchased and sold for myself. And I knew the pain points of a first-time buyer. I knew the pain points of getting screwed by buying something, not knowing the effects of the power lines.
Power line.
So I communicated that very clearly to my buyers, and I noticed the ones who appreciated it the most were first-time buyers, because they were walking in, they don't know nothing, and I would walk them through that process from A to Z, being very transparent, very patient. When I came to take on a listing, I would approach it with that same sensitivity, with that same softness, and I would lose the listing. Then you started realizing, no, you got to be a bit more of a shark to actually represent a listing. This was, I'm in the business 16 years. It took me 4 years to really grasp this notion. And so I started going in with more of a confident, aggressive, and taking charge of the client.
Exactly.
Right? And it could drastically change my business.
Yeah.
And now I actually prefer listings because I know exactly what to do to prep it. And most of, like you said, goes into the preparation of a property. So this morning, right before coming to this podcast, I went to a listing presentation. I looked at the house. I already had all my guys. I have contractors that would do painting, caulking, fixing of things that are really in the eye. And then obviously staging. I have movers that will take all this stuff out, put it in storage, do the staging, and then video tours, virtual tours, all that stuff. So you got to be ready to spend on your listing. A house like that, sometimes I spent $25,000. On a $4.5 million home.
Mm-hmm.
And the seller on that particular home was thinking of, maybe we shouldn't sell. And I was like, maybe you should. But then right after, we got a really good offer, and then it became two offers, and I really negotiated and pushed the price up. They were ecstatic. So, you know, you take the risk. You know, a lot of the clients, obviously you have contractual agreements. You spend the money, they're supposed to pay you back, but who's going to enforce it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, it takes so much time to gain experience in this business because there's so many moving parts.
It's very fluid.
It's very fluid. It's not just one thing. People come into the business, they think, I can sell real estate. And they think because one negotiation went well that all the future negotiations are going to do well too. But it's not true. Every single transaction has its own problems.
That's actually why I love real estate. I'm so deeply passionate about it. It's because every day is a different challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I get to meet different people. Every day I get to see different property, and it's always a different challenge. Mm-hmm. I'm always learning as well.
You can't teach your employees or your teammates what those challenges will be because you're dealing with different buyers and sellers on every transaction. Every one of them has a different way, different strategy, different value, different belief. Like you walk into someone believes because they spent X amount of dollars on their renovations, they got to get X amount of dollars back. For example, and then you got to teach them, no, it's not how much you spent on the property, it's how much the value is in the neighborhood. If the market has come down drastically and all the homes in the area are selling for $1.5 million, you're not going to get $2 million just because you spent X amount of dollars more than everyone else. That's just not how it works. So educating every single client and bringing their beliefs down to a more realistic belief is one of the biggest challenges in this business, I would say.
It really is.
It's really conversations. And yes. People say, what do realtors do? Why do they deserve this commission? It's really hard to prove and to answer that question because every scenario is so different. Sometimes you're putting out a fire because a negotiation is going wrong because of a small little thing that could break the whole transaction apart. You know, you're selling a $4 million house and both seller and buyer get into an argument over a certain thing that needs to be fixed. And that item is like $1,000, for example.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose a $4.5 million house because of a $1,000 item, but it becomes a fixated. And it's our job to bring the conversation over to alleviate that pressure. Every scenario.
You brought up a good point, Cash, because me and you, we both started around the same time, 2009. And we have quite a bit of experience, right? 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of listeners, a lot of newer agents that just started a business, they're probably saying like, oh, Cash, Ray, it's easy for you to say, you know, we have a lot of experience, so we know how to deal with these different scenarios and different clients that we always meet. But for the newcomers and the new agents that just got licensed a year, 2 years in, what advice do you give in a sense that how can they level up and how can they gain the knowledge and experience, right?
Mm, honestly, and it's an advice I would give myself if I started again. Join a team, but join an honest team. Like there's a lot of different teams and it all has to do with the culture of that team and also who's leading the team. I feel like whoever the leader is, will kind of push that energy onto its teammates. It has to be one collaborative effort, and you'll learn a lot from the team. And every time you have challenges, you can go back to the team lead and say, what do I do in this scenario, and get proper feedback from someone who's experienced. And as you know, like, the challenges are all completely different, so you need someone there by your side. If you want to learn on your own, which is what I did, that's why it took me 4 years to understand how to handle a listing. If I was in a team, I think I would have grasped that much faster. And it was immediately increased my income, but also kind of took away some of the frustrations that I went through to get to the understandings.
I completely, completely agree. I just, when I first started, I wish there was like a team kind of structure or team out there.
We both started in Remax Realtron.
We just found out.
Yeah.
And that's how big Realtron is. Yeah. Is that we never bumped into each other. There's like seven branches.
Yeah, but there's a bad thing about Realtron. Yes. I mean, there's good things, and I don't want to talk bad about brokerages, but there's a lot of top producers, but it's a very competitive culture. I'm at Remax Hallmark now. It's a very collaborative culture.
Good. That's how it's supposed to be.
But competitive is good too, because it pushes you to do better.
Yeah, healthy competition is obviously good. You need that. But there's a difference between healthy competition and then a toxic environment.
Yeah, it gets toxic sometimes.
Of course.
Because then people overstep you. Like, I remember my old office, if you printed an address and it was in the garbage and it was visible, someone would actually pick that up and drive to that home and try to steal the listing out of your hand. That's how rough and rugged it was.
I remember.
But I kind of liked that feeling.
Yes.
Because it gave me a, you know, don't make those mistakes.
Yes.
And be sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's. However, when I moved to Remax Hallmark, I actually generated a whole lot of money from collaborating with agents. We would share addresses. I was very reluctant at first, but then they would share with me. I would be like, really? You're going to do that? But then I learned to kind of adapt that same mentality, and I started sharing my addresses, and then we started doing deals exclusively. I did, the first year I came to Hallmark, I did like 3 exclusive transactions, which were high paying, like big ticket items. So my mentality shifted. I was like, oh, competition is good, but collaboration, like you can collaborate and make a lot more money. Your efforts are joined and you can get things done way easier, way faster.
Do you feel a sense of community in Hallmark?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Steve, Deborah, and Ken, because they're one of the best broker owners. You know, they really spent time and effort on their...
Steve Tabrizi. He's the man. Yeah.
Yeah, he's taking very good care of me over the years and taught me a lot.
Yes.
Pushed me into areas. You know, I'm not a great public speaker. I've always had like a difficulty.
Really? I don't see that. I can't believe you just said that. You're not a great public speaker.
I'm not a great public speaker because...
anybody could go on your IG right now and they see millions of views of you like making the skits. It's hilarious.
It's taken time and effort to build the courage and the confidence to be able to speak. And this is why also social media is very good and important for anyone out there, especially if you're shy, because it's a tool. You know, it's like the mirror. When the mirror was first built, and it was like the humans that first saw themselves in the mirror, they were like, oh, what? I look like that? And like at first they might have not liked it, but then later they were able to perfect their look by being able to see themselves. Same thing with social media. You make videos and you put it out there. You can tweak the way you talk, tweak the way you sound, tweak your posture, the way you look, so that you can better yourself and be a better version of yourself. It's a great tool to use to get feedback on yourself. And people are shy. They're like, I don't like the way I sound. Well, guess what? You sound like that to other people anyways.
Yeah, it should be real. And that's why in our house tours, we say things in a way that how we usually say it live, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why it doesn't make sense if you put out content and that's not how you really are in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
I find it actually kind of sad, actually. Yeah. Because for you to be something that you're not, it's like it must hurt deep down in a sense, right?
Because you're covering it up.
Yeah. And then by the time, let's just say you are trying to be that agent or dress up that agent or talk that way. Mm-hmm. Even when you get the business, when you get the lead, when they meet you, they're like, wait a minute, you're not like that.
Yeah,
Like, what's the point?
And the same thing with me, because when I would make the funny videos, people are expecting this like happy, and the good thing is I do have that energy.
Yes.
So I would get people complimenting me on it, that like, hey, you still have that same energy in person. And it's like, great, that's good. It takes a little bit of time to get to know someone, but then once you do, you open up, and then, you know, and you become the source of light and positivity for people. And I think that generates a lot of business for me. People want to be around people that make them feel good, because when they feel good, they are a better version of themselves and they can make better decisions like buying a house or selling a house or making a move. It's, you know, when you're working with someone who you're not comfortable with, you're kind of reluctant and it becomes an obstacle for them to really let go and think deep down inside of what they're trying to accomplish.
We're in the like trust and know business, right? If they don't like you at the end of the day, you, no matter how good of a salesman you are, you could be the Wolf of Wall Street or anything. If they don't like you, they're not going to use you.
Yeah.
Right? They need someone that they can relate to and know that they got their back.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And going back to Hallmark Cash, is like the sense of community there, right?
Yeah.
How important do you think it is for agents to have community and culture?
It's important. It's the most important thing. And I'll tell you why. You know that feeling, and this happened to me last night. Our neighbors invited us to go and go for drinks and stuff.
Nice.
And I usually sleep by like 10 p.m. Mm. I can't stay awake longer. I need the energy. But I was like, let's make an effort. Let's go. And after that, I was telling my wife, I'm like, you know, you get this feeling when you spend time with people you like and enjoy. You get this feeling of accomplishment.
Yeah.
And you feel happy, this fluttering in your stomach. You want to accomplish more. Same thing with the community. So when you go into the office and you're looking forward to seeing those people and you have great conversations, you feel motivated. Me talking to you before the podcast and you telling me about your team dynamic and your culture and how you like to you know, hustle hard and stay humble, and then you show me your videos, it's motivating. Like when I see that, I'm like, I would love to make videos with this guy.
Maybe one day, your next skit.
Next skit.
The Chinese agent and the Iranian agent.
I have two really good listings coming up. Maybe we should do a house tour.
Let's do it.
I know you said you do your house tours only on your listings, but I want you to branch off and collaborate.
Listen, I'm always about collaborating.
Let's do it.
Let's
do it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then maybe that way we could start doing things together. But
let's do it, man.
This is the thing. The collaboration, the community, it motivates you to do better, and you use it as an example to reference where you're at. And it's like the healthy competition / collaboration. You see where someone is at. You use them as a role model, as a mentor. You ask them questions, and then they do it to their mentor, and then so on and so forth. And then together, everyone's increasing and growing together.
Well, it's so important to have a strong community, right? Because it's like the power of masterminds, right? It's like a masterclass on steroids. Mm-hmm. Going back to the question about like, okay, yeah, we got a lot of experience and we know how to deal with different situations. But for a lot of newcomers, a lot of new agents that's planning to join, and what you just shared, the number one advice, same as my advice for you guys, is to join a team. Why we say that is because it's literally like a masterclass on steroids. If you're with in a group, an environment, right, that everyone is truly helping each other, right, where you truly have different leaders and different producers coming together, sharing knowledge, sharing market knowledge, uplifting one another, supporting one another. No ego, right?
This is a tough business. People don't realize
it's powerful stuff.
If you have a bad month, it could really drain you emotionally. That emotional drainage will snowball into you not performing well. You walk into an open house that weekend. People are walking in and they're qualified buyers, or they really want to sell their house down the street. But because your energy is so down and you're thinking, oh, I didn't do well last month. And all of a sudden you lose, because your energy is down, the people don't connect with you. You lose that opportunity. You lose that prospect. They walk away. And that translates, that snowballs and translates to you declining. But if you're around the right people that uplift you and say, don't worry about the last month, we have this, focus on this, have these conversations, be happy. It's all a mood, right? It's the same thing. I go home with the kids. I want the kids to see happy dad.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, the dads would go leave the house and work for like 10, 12 hours shifts. And they would come home drained and tired and exhausted, and they would be grumpy with their kids. And I hear that a lot from other people. They're like, my dad came home and I didn't want to bother him. Or he'd be like very short fused. And you know, it wasn't very pleasant. I heard someone say this 2 days ago. I was happy when my dad wasn't home when he was at work.
Sad.
I don't want my kids to ever think that way or talk that way.
Definitely not.
We live in a time where few things are in our favor. A, dads are more involved with their kids. B, we have the ability to have the flexibility. Like since COVID, since DocuSign came, we have electronic signatures, electronic initials. You remember when we first started the business,
I would drive around just for an initial.
Yeah, it was not just an initial. You would get to someone's house and they would say, come on in, we have tea, we have goodies. And it's like, okay, I'll stay for 5 minutes. 5 minutes turned into 2 hours.
2 hours.
One initial. Yeah. You'd send the offer, it wasn't accepted. So that 2 hours was wasted, right?
Yeah.
So So we live in a very fortunate time where now I truly have, and I tell my wife this, I'm like, I have an angel or God or someone's watching me and creating these beautiful circumstances where I'm able to have the family that I want, to make really good money, to be around great people, to have my health, and to have the opportunities to have everything that I want, really. And I'm truly blessed and thankful for that.
It's gratitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Cash, you have 5 kids, the sixth one's coming. You're a crazy multimedia content producer. Thank you. See you have new content almost every day.
No, not every day, but yeah.
if it's not on the reels, it's on the stories.
True,
right?
True, yeah.
YouTube, all that. Mm-hmm. And also you're doing the deals. You're a deal maker.
Mm.
How do you do all this?
it's you can't do everything at once. You have to do one thing, do it well, add another thing. Do it well, find out what you can delegate that part, then add another thing. You have to layer it slowly like an onion. You can't just say, I'm joining real estate, I'm going to start going to gym, I'm going to do this, I'm going to quit my bad habits, I'm going to stop drinking, I'm going to stop going to a club. That doesn't work that way. Your body's going to go into shock and you're going to absolutely hate yourself. You have to do things gradually, slowly, build on a proper foundation. And that foundation is obviously your health, right? You have to focus on bettering your health, feeling good about yourself. So when you wake up, you don't wake up groggy, cloudy, grumpy, because that's just waking up on the wrong foot. So throughout the years, I've learned myself, which is another challenge. You have to know who you are personally,
yeah.
Where you go wrong and where you go right. Focus on the right things and try to shed the wrong things, and then slowly build on that foundation and then add on new responsibilities. I honestly feel like I'm very calm and collected, even with the 6 kids or 5 and 6 on the way, 2 dogs, 1 cat. You know, I'm a great husband. Yeah. Me and my wife spend time together. We do dates every so often.
Perfect.
I spend a lot of time with my kids. I make them breakfast every morning. I post it on my stories. I make big breakfast. We do omelets. I make them cake every morning. Bread, cheese, spinach, avocado. Like, I make sure they're well fed. And I've told my wife, I'm like, if I have to give up, if business slows down for whatever reason, things happen, I'll give up everything, but I'll make sure the kids are fed properly.
Yeah.
Mentally and physically.
Very important to eat healthy, eat well.
Health is number one.
Yeah.
Because if you know, I used to think it was cheesy to say, oh, this is your temple, blah, blah, blah. But as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that that's the truth. Because if you treat your body with respect, you will have more energy and motivation and, you know, just all around, just be excited about life.
Mm-hmm.
And being excited about life translates to opportunities and things come your way. It really truly does attract things to you.
Yes.
When you're attractive, right? And that's where the funny content is very powerful, because it's like a shortcut to that attraction. When you make people laugh, they immediately get attracted to you. You know, I have people in my DMs like, hey, can we go for coffee? And I'm like, what do you want to talk about? It's like, I just really want to meet, you know, like, and it's fantastic because I love to hear that, because it just means that I'm doing something right as a person where they're attracted to wanting to be around me. And that's where the business starts.
Well, it's putting a guard down. It's the public's eye. Everyone thinks agents are so uptight and serious, and it's always about, you know, doing the deal and commission breath and all that.
Mm.
But really, if you put your guard down, just be you and show the world you on social media,
exactly.
Then automatically people are more want to engage with you.
Yeah. I actually saw some sort of stat, or it was something that said humans are most likely to sense authenticity.
Yes.
So not love, not hate, authenticity. So people know, they can immediately tell if you're kind of lying or you're being truthful or authentic. And it's like the sixth sense aspect of your body. And it's very important to be in tune with that, right? There's been so many times where I felt wrong off someone, but I dismissed it. But then later on, it came to
that. I like to call it vibe. I'm all about the vibe. And one of our core values is good energy. Mm-hmm. It's what you literally just said, that people can sense, you know, if you had a bad day or you're not. Mm-hmm. So energy is very important. And that's why you got to take care of yourself first,
The other important thing before I forget that's related to that is, earlier in my career, I started taking on new debts. And as soon as I started doing deals, I was like, I'm doing good. Let me go buy a new car. We can buy another investment property. Let's do this. And my debts would grow, and that would be pressure on me. And then the pressure would actually be sensed with my clients.
Yes.
It's like, buy, buy, buy. You know, like you want to push your clients because you need to make that money. So I earlier on, I noticed that don't leverage yourself too much in this business because you'll lose your authentic self and you'll be swayed by the money. You'll be motivated to push clients to buy or sell, even though it's not the right decision for them at that time. And that will make you lose your pool of business, your clients, your database, because they can sense it if an agent is desperate.
Yes.
And never put yourself in a position where you could be desperate and that people around you can sense that.
Never.
Because once they do, the word gets around that, hey, this person just wants to sell me something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Do not ever financial leverage. And I mean, I don't financial leverage so much. You got to watch out for that.
Yeah. I mean, there's good ways of leveraging yourself, like mortgages and stuff.
You got to watch out. Yeah. But you got
to
watch out.
But don't buy a G-Wagon and pay $2,700 just to look cool.
Yeah.
In fact,
Or finance a Rolex. Yeah.
But none of my clients, when I used to drive Mercedes-Benzes, I had 6 Mercedes-Benzes until I bought the Tesla. The Tesla was the best purchase I've made.
Save gas,
Tesla,
save time.
And this electric watch, Apple Watch. And I'll tell you why. I had a red CLS Tesla. A red CLS Mercedes-Benz. And it was very aggressive looking. And it just made me douchey looking. It gave people that vibe. So I'd pull up to their house, you know, with a suit on, a tie, and like a nicer watch. I felt like I lost some business because my thing wasn't always just luxury. I actually prefer being in the condo bracket all the way to like $2-2.5 million. I feel like that's the right place to be because you're dealing with more humble people. You're dealing with a product that has a bigger audience. Not that I don't like my luxury stuff, but it's a whole different beast. And I noticed that I was losing some of that business just with the vibe that I was giving off. When I switched over to Tesla, having an Apple Watch, you know, being a family man, it portrays an image of like, I am successful, but I'm also smart. I'm saving the planet. I'm smart on my calculations of the, you know, the consumption I'm spending on. My watch is something that will give me feedback on my fitness and my calendar and my text messages. It's not a Rolex to just prove that I have money. And there's nothing wrong with Rolex. It's just the angle that I took. And I felt like it brought more business to me. And people kind of were less, had less of a defenses up. You know, or like saw me less as a salesman who was trying to push to them.
Well, to summarize, authentic. You just be authentic. Authenticity.
Exactly.
Because I think before, and I think that's where I see kind of the industry, there's a group of people that's like, I got to look a certain way or be a certain way or be that agent. But no, you just got to be yourself.
And you got to be confident.
Confident. And I feel for you, maybe at that time, like, oh, you have to always chasing materialistic stuff, bands. But then when you found that, actually, no, I'm perfectly comfortable with a Tesla and a watch, people can feel that vibe, that authenticity, feel that energy. Mm. And I
was using it as an insecure. It was to cover my insecurities. You know, when you first come into the business, you know you don't have the experience. So you're trying to overcome that and, kind of make up for it with a nice watch, a nice car, suits to say, I am successful.
Yeah.
Right?
That's why I want to break down in this podcast and let the industry know. It's like you do not have to get these stuff or buy these stuff to be successful. People just want to put people first. Like people just want to care want to see that you actually care for them.
Yeah.
That you're a solution provider.
And this is where social media is key because first impressions are important. So someone sees you with a nice car and stuff, they're like, "Oh, I know this guy. He seems like he makes good money. I'm going to give him my business." Nowadays, we're blessed to have social media. So someone will watch us and see, "Wow, this guy is doing a lot of transactions. He has a lot of knowledge in this field." And you're sharing all of that. So now you don't need to flash.
You don't need to flash.
You don't need to have a crazy car. Because you've already proven yourself from the 100 videos that person watched before they decided to call you. In fact, when they call you, they don't even ask you for a listing presentation anymore. They're like, "Raymond, come and list my house. Because I've seen the wonderful work you do. And I know you're knowledgeable. You have a good team." All of this stuff is on social media. So we don't need to overcompensate and show a car or a nice watch or whatever. We show our abilities through social.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Cash, you embody our slogan, hustle hard, stay humble, man.
Yeah, hustle you truly every
do.
Day.
You
hustle,
truly
hustle,
do.
Hustle.
So we're going to leave off this pod with, we always ask this guest this last question is, which book do you recommend? Or you want to share like a mantra, like which book that has helped you with your business?
you know, I forget the name of it, but I've got audiobooks, and I could tell you.
Audiobooks, doesn't matter if it's right audiobooks, now. Podcasts, or
it's the Silva book on, you know, like just positive thinking and like attraction. Here, I'll show you which one I'm kind of listening to. I really like it, and I think it's very effective. So Silva Mind Control Method, because it teaches you, and I used to read hard books, but I honestly don't have time anymore. So I listen to audiobooks. This one I really like because it teaches you how to really envision what you could achieve. And it gives you actual step-by-step instructions. Like it tells you, close your eyes, get into a meditative state, calm down, relax, and envision you're facing your house. Then it says, go inside your house, step by step. And you truly start to feel and feel how it normally feels. Mm. And then he says, get to the wall, but now picture what's inside the wall. And all of a sudden, this is something new that you can't do in the physical world. But the process of trying it mentally, and then it says, now imagine an apple inside your wall. And it's such a weird thing to imagine. But the purpose of this exercise is to work out your imagination. Mm. You know, as adults, we lose our imagination.
Yeah.
We only can see what we've seen in the material world. But when we exercise our imagination, I can come up with beautiful content ideas, you know, that's out of the box. But also we can imagine ourselves what we are not today, which let's say I'm not successful, but I can imagine myself healthy, successful. And if I can do this with conviction and I can really picture it, truly imagine myself and accept the fact that I am, then it's easier to achieve. And that's what this book does. I truly recommend it to anybody who is stuck in a mind loop where they can't see themselves beyond a certain point, or you're given a task to achieve where it's public speaking and you're like, that's not who I am. You could be anybody you want to be. You just have to practice seeing yourself in that scenario, seeing yourself achieving those goals. And once you see it, you believe it.
That's a great recommendation. I'm going to get that book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Audiobook is for the win because, you know, I can't read at home. That many kids and dogs and everything.
Correct. No, I'm with you, brother. I used to read a lot. Now I'm doing audiobooks because that's the only way to
car
do it.
Rides, at the gym, we're on the car all the time.
Gym. Yeah. When you were doing the walking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. So I can talk for hours. I know you're probably going to run out of footage, but I truly appreciate you having me.
Yeah. Thanks, bro.
Yeah. And this was good. Better. You know, everyone has different impressions of people through social media or something. I didn't really look you up that deep, but, you know, I think we could be friends, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this.
No, I really enjoyed it.
I hope maybe next time I come and we enjoy a drink together.
We got to do a shout to Killa for sure.
Yeah. I'm game. Yeah,
okay.
Thank you so much.
That's my Hustle Hard, Stay Humble episode. If you enjoy what you're listening to, please rate us 5 out of 5 stars at your platform of choice. Cash, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it.
All right. Yeah. Until next time. Thank you.
Peace.